There's a way, a way, such a better way. Today, today. Raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way. Ooh, there's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Now raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. The way is the Adam's way.
This is Rod Adams, and it's time for Atomic Show number 228. On November 18th, I had the opportunity to attend a talk/discussion titled Energy Wendy Today, Status of Germany's Energy Transition. The guest speaker was Georg Mao, the first Secretary for Climate and Energy, the Embassy of the Federal Republic of Germany. The event was sponsored by the Global America Business Institute, GABI, and the Korea Institute of Energy Research, KIER. And it was a terrific roundtable discussion consisting of about 20 people who were actively interested in energy issues, renewable energy, and energy politics. I got the opportunity to record the conversation and then obtain permission to use it as an Atomic Show podcast because, as the contact point at GABI told me, all of their discussions are on the record. So here's a recording of what I think is a fascinating discussion involving a number of people with questioning attitudes and some really decent answers from the presenter, and some places where the presenter obviously had some challenges in getting the answers that were acceptable to the audience. The introduction was in progress when I clicked record. I hope you enjoyed this. I'm looking forward to hearing your feedback after you've listened. I also want to make the comment that my ability to attend these events is partially enabled by the generous contributions that I continue to receive from readers of Atomic Insights and listeners to the Atomic Show. So if you want to help ensure these keep coming, click the donate button. Be generous. Bye.
Given sort of the geographic limitations that Korea has in terms of location, size, I think here, Korea more broadly understands that international cooperation in this area is critical, as well as lessons learned internationally. And so, in part, that's sort of the motivation for organizing this roundtable series. On that note, I believe we have a most appropriate topic for today, as well as the right person to make that presentation, Dr. Georg Mao from the German Embassy here in Washington, D.C. He's the first Secretary for Climate and Energy at the Embassy. The full bio should be on the participants list that you have in front of you. Regarding the format of the roundtable, Dr. Mao will give his presentation. He said it's fine if you go ahead and ask any questions in the middle of his presentation. Of course, we'll do sort of a formal Q&A, but I guess the hope is that this will sort of blossom into a more informal group discussion. So, Dr. Mao, thanks for coming, and we very much look forward to the presentation.
Yeah. Hello, everybody. It's a pleasure for me to say a few words on the German energy transition. Before I start, I made an interesting observation over here. So this clock just fell down a few minutes ago, and then it maintained at 5 minutes to 12 in German. That means if something is 5 minutes to 12, that means it's very late. It's about to act. maybe that's a symbol for this kind of topic for today. So start acting. I think that was in the heart of our policy when we decided on that a few years ago. So I will talk a little bit about the frame and the motivation of the energy transition. There are different perceptions what it's all about, and I will say a few words on that. And of course, a few instruments, the heart of the energy transition, then what's up at the moment, where do we stand. So then, of course, upon the costs. It might be interesting to discuss a little bit the nuclear phase-out, and of course, a lot of different perceptions what the energy transition is about, a lot of myths around it. say a few words on that and how we are revising at the moment the most important instrument, that it's Renewable Energy Act, the EEG. So these are a few discussion points. We can do more as much as time allows. Just when you look at the whole decision-making on the energy policy in Germany, it's some people believe it's only about nuclear or only about what we did in the last years. Actually, it's a long-term policy which started at least in 1990, introducing the renewable energies, which were identified as maybe an interesting energy source for the future those days. And then, of course, climate policies happened. You see that on top here, there are the international things happening. And so the German energy policy is more or less integrated into the European perspective. And important steps definitely were, of course, all the things going along with the introduction of renewables. And then, of course, what happened to nuclear energy. It was quite clear that already in the 90s there won't be any new projects in Germany anymore. So it was only a question how long we would use nuclear energy. And there was a opposition building up in Germany, actually. Society was a little bit critical on that, and there was a discussion going on since decades, actually. And then the latest decision to phase out nuclear was done in 2011, but before that we had a concrete decision already in 2000, and then this was taken back in 2010. And in 2010, maybe the most robust tools and the most robust measures were taken, the so-called energy concept, and I will say a few words on that. So it's a long-term policy which actually maybe culminated in 2011 with the energy transition, now called energy transition. So, and it's important to know why the German government, I mean, it was a very conservative government. They were not, you could not say they were green people or so, whatever. This government decided on that quite, you know, green or sustainable policy. Why was that so? So all the studies told us that our energy supply is not very sustainable in terms of energy security. So we are importing 70% of our total energy in Germany. The same is almost true for Europe. So all of our energy sources come from other countries, like coal and gas and oil. Then in terms of affordability, we highly depend on these kind of resources, and I will show a picture a little later how the costs for these resources developed, and they tripled the costs over the last decade. So it's quite interesting to look for homegrown resources. And then environmentally wise, it's like we are burning a lot of coal for our electricity. 50% of our power comes from coal power plants. And it's almost impossible with that to achieve our quite ambitious climate targets. So I come to that a little later. So in terms of sustainability, our present or our previous energy business was simply not sustainable and not working in the long term. So we had to look for something new. And we launched studies. Basically, all the long-term scenarios which we looked at, and these are just a few what the government looked at. We looked at all the sectors in Germany. We had different scenarios under different policies telling us what are the... Our question was, how can we achieve sustainable energy supply until the midst of the century? Would it be possible to use renewable energies? How much would it cost? What are the best partners for renewable energies? What is possible in terms of energy efficiency? What are the main sectors? What are the costs about them? And that these were the main questions we asked the scientists around 2008, 2009, 2010, all these years when this policy was developed. And the quite interesting results were, it's possible with renewable energies. Usually I show a map here which shows the different renewables, but I want to move on. It was quite clear it can be done with renewables, which you can use in Germany, even though Germany is not the best country for renewables. I come to that a little later on. You need energy efficiency, and you have to build on the infrastructure. So we built the Energiewende, the energy transition, on three pillars, that is renewable energies, and we developed a lot of instruments for that, mainly what everybody might know is the Renewable Energy Sources Act, which already exists a few decades, and then a bunch of the other instruments. And the same for energy efficiency and for the future grids. So like for the first time, Germany had a so-called federal requirement plan that looks at the Germany as a whole and not only the different federal states, because now we have to look for the whole country. So what can we produce in the north and maybe have to bring in the south and so on, all these questions. All together, this so-called energy concept of 2010 samples 180 different measures. And these are our targets. And the targets are not randomly chosen. It was quite clear we want to achieve our climate targets. So if Germany wants to become a low-carbon society, we have to bring down our emissions by at least 80 to 95% until the midst of the century. This is what science tells us. And it's quite clear that this has to be done. So we have to achieve a carbon level more or less comparable with that of India per head. And it's possible. So the studies clearly told us it is possible with renewable energies if you at least have, let's say, 80% in the power sector. That was our target. That is our target until 2050. And in total, at least 60%. That is our target until 2050. And this is where we stand. At the moment, climate-wise, we are around 25% compared to 1990. So we are really brought down our emissions by 25%.
Excuse me, is 1990 for unified Germany or for West Germany only?
That's for total Germany, yeah.
So they got to include the very high emissions of East Germany.
Yeah, the very high emissions of East Germany, these were very high, and they went drastically down because a lot of the inefficient power plants, inefficient industry was closed. But of course, we had to build new power plants, so a lot of investment went there. And 8% of these 25% are attributed to the vinification. And the rest came from other efficiency measures. So what you can see here, energy efficiency, which is very crucial. So we want to bring down the energy consumption by 50% until the midst of the century. We are not on track, actually. We're not on track, so we are at 3.3. And we have to double the speed of energy productivity increase. And we have to double the speed of renovation of old buildings. That's a lot of potential for saving energy. Well, one success definitely is the increase of renewable energies. What you can see here, we have targets in different sectors. So we can use renewables for electricity, of course, but also for heating and for transport. So these are our targets, the left bars. And at the moment, Germany stands at around 28% in the first half of 2040, it was around 30%. So it's growing, it's steadily increasing.
So biomass is included as a renewable?
Biomass is a renewable, yes. And here you can see the composition of our renewables. It's mainly wind, and comes now solar is second, and comes biomass. We have traditionally hydro, which we can't increase anymore, and a little bit of waste. You can see basically since the last 10 years, all the other resources went down and only renewables went up. One interesting thing, if you look at the ownership, it's different from the United States. In the United States, you have all the big utilities building the huge solar farms. In Germany, it's very attractive for private people to invest on their solar roof. So we have more than 2 million people are electricity producers at the moment in Germany. Why did utilities, that is an interesting question, why did utilities not participate so much in that concept? Because everybody talks about the huge subsidies for renewables. Actually, it was not big enough. I mean, you put, the profits were around 7%. This was not attractive enough for utilities in the old days. So nowadays, they might be happy to get 7%, mm-hmm. but not 5 years ago. So that is why most of the renewables on the hand of private people. One of the biggest challenges definitely is the building sectors. If we want to bring down our energy consumption, we have to work on the existing buildings, which consume a major part of our energy in the building sector. Actually, 40% of our energy demand is distributed to comes from the half building sector, and one third of the emissions come from that sector. And the saving potential is around 80% in old buildings. But of course, that introduces a lot of measures you would have to do, and you can't do it in one step. Usually, we think we have to do it until 2050 in two or three steps, and you have to combine different measures so to bring down the cost. Second challenge, definitely the new infrastructure. First of all, everybody thinks about the big transmission lines for electricity we have to build to bring the offshore wind in the future down to the consumption centers in the south and in the southwest. But it's also about intelligent grids. It's also about storages, which we might need when renewable energy increases far further. So, and of course, demand side management and everything. I will say a few words on the grids and the grid management later on. Third challenge, of course, Germany is convinced that we have to commit ourselves to aggressive climate policy to bring down our emissions. That is consensus in Germany, so everybody agrees on that. And we are not really on track. We have a 40% target for 2020, and at the moment we are around 25%. All the studies tell us we will need more further measures to achieve that 40% reduction until 2020. At the moment, the discussion goes on whether we should do something on the power plants, and there are different opinions in the government at the moment. But we will come out with a so-called action plan on the 3rd of December. And of course, you can talk a whole day about all the challenges, and there are lots of things to be done. But of course, we already can see a lot of effort, a lot of benefits from that, and it's clearly worth the effort and the investment of that program. I will talk about a few of these benefits. For instance, we're already reducing the increasing costs for imports. What you can see here that only in the last decade, the costs for imports have more than doubled, and renewables and efficiency bring down these costs by 30 and more billion per year. That's quite a good effect. Then the only, we are talking about, particularly since the Ukraine crisis, we talk about the energy safety, the energy security, and with 70% imports of resources, it's quite difficult to be not dependent on other countries. And actually, as we don't have the other resources besides lignite, we probably only have the renewables to bring down that dependency, and you can see here it would be possible at the limits of the century to at least almost half that dependency. And of course, with regards to GDP, it's quite clear that compared to the business as usual, an aggressive climate action can save a lot of money in terms of avoiding damages, avoiding the consequences of extreme weather events. And this is a European study comparing the effects of a climate action, ambitious climate action, compared to the business as usual in different European countries. And you can, left bar shows the costs on the GDP if the business as usual is continued, and the right bar, which is smaller, tells you that you can save a lot of GDP for damage costs. Then, of course, the renewables and efficiency is a very creative and innovative sector in Germany. You see a lot of patents in this sector. Actually, it's the most dense patent sector in Germany. And with job creation, at the moment, we stand at 317,000 new jobs created in the renewable sector. We look for another 600,000 jobs until 2020. That is much more, actually, than in the traditional energies. What you can find here is, and in Germany, like, is at the moment almost at 400,000 jobs. That's more than double what you have jobs in the mining and conventional fuel sectors. Farmers like it. Farmers like very much the energy transition in Germany. So many of the farmers become now energy farmers. They work on biomass, but not only, also wind and solar on their ground. And that is why in total, if you ask around in Germany, even the latest polls show that most people like the renewable energies. That's a very majority. And then even with the latest experiences in the energy transition. So in Germany, like over here, the media are not always very friendly with the energy transition and with the policy, because they always look at the problems, focus on the challenges and on the which don't work. And then, of course, you always find a lot of these things. Still, there's a majority in favor of the energy transition in Germany. And even with regard to the costs, which is a difficult discussion, there is a majority supporting the energy transition costs. So actually, these are investments in additional capacity in Germany. And you can see here, even though the capacity was built up, the costs went down. That is due to a significantly decrease of cost per megawatt. What we also had in the last year, we had less new capacities, but in total, the costs went down due to more efficiency in the systems. But basically, in Germany, the investments are in the order of 20 billion per year. And of course, you could argue, is that a lot of money or is it not a lot of money? These are not subsidies, by the way, so the investments in Germany are not state money. It is money from the consumers, which is distributed to the system, and then it's taken out of the system. Again, everybody pays, in Germany, pays 6 cents for renewable support for each kilowatt hour. I come to that a little later on.
So that's not government money, though?
That's not government money.
It's just a tax in another way.
It is, it's even different from a tax. I mean, you could say it's a renewable tax on your bill, on your energy bill. Yeah, you could call it that way. But it's not government money which competes with, you know, new kindergartens or so. It's quite...
On your last slide, was that cost tax factored into those costs?
These are actually the investments.
It's
the capital investments.
So when we look back, so when we helped other energy fuels to get additive in Germany, this is the money we put in different energy sources. Like we put a lot of money in hard coal. Of course, it's a very, I would say, it's a very traditional technology. We still put money in there, and we have to stop that until 2018. That's EU law. We have put a lot of money for development of nuclear technologies.
I didn't challenge Mr. Mao at the time, but Germany is throwing away their large investments in nuclear development by eliminating that source of power from their grid.
Same with brown coal. And compared to that, renewable energies is not the first. Well, if you talk about percentage of federal budget, then of course you can see other sources enjoyed much more support than renewable energies so far.
It's also worth breaking in right now and considering the fact that Mr. Mao made a point of saying that the renewable subsidies are not really subsidies because they're coming from consumers, not from taxpayers. Of course, that's really a distinction without a difference. It's not clear, however, if those renewable fees show up in the subsidy comparison.
What is quite interesting is the effect on the merit order of the energy. So if you look at the electricity market in Germany, this is how the price is determined. So the last plant which has to operate to fulfill the demand determines the price. That's basic law of the electricity market. And what happens if renewables come into that system? Then simply renewables come in for free in our system, and then, of course, the price goes down. And that also influences the wholesale market price. So that is a good, very good effect for big industry. It's not such a good effect for renewable surcharge, because renewable surcharge is a difference between that price and the price we pay for renewable feed-in tariff. So I don't know whether that is too complicated, but that is how the system works. So basically, this price is very close to what big industry pays, but in the same time, the costs for the renewables are calculated. The total money of all the feed-in, that's about 30 billion each year, and then compared to the average stock market price. And if that goes down, of course...
Several times Mr. Mao said stock market price when I think he meant spot market price.
The difference is bigger. And then what we pay for the renewables, each consumer is bigger. So I don't know whether that was clear, but basically, if you hear from Germany, big industry, that the energy policy is bad for the business, that is not the truth.
Well, they don't have to pay the renewable surcharge.
They don't pay that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Germany household electricity prices, they went up definitely over the last decade. What you can see here, part of that, of course, is the renewable surcharge. That's that part. It's growing steadily over the years, but it's not the only segment of the total price which has grown. So it almost doubled since here, but the increase for renewables has almost below 1 cent now to 6.2 cents. Next year, for the first time, it will go down a very little bit, the surcharge for renewables. So while the electricity rate, what you pay for a kilowatt hour, is up, the share, what a household spends for electricity, is always around 2% in Germany. And interestingly, this is almost the same number what people in US pay, because they use three times the electricity from Germany. I mean, the rate is much cheaper over here, but they use three times kilowatt hours. It's 3,500 for a German household compared to 11,500 for a US household, 2.5 persons.
No, we don't just throw that electricity away, though.
Yes. US households throw that away. That's true. If it's more expensive, then you don't throw it away anymore. It's interesting to look at the competitiveness of renewable energies, and they get more and more competitive over the years. What you can see here is the range of fossil fuels. Well, no problem. That more and more renewable fuels are in the range of fossil fuel power. Some even are cheaper. If you look at carbon-free technologies, which we have to look at in Germany because we want to achieve our climate targets, then we have the wind onshore being now the cheapest. We have photovoltaic, wind offshore. Nuclear is actually at the moment going through the roof. CCS, it is quite expensive, but it's particularly not, please.
Do these costs factor in the cost of backups, like gas for wind or...
No, this is on the levelized cost of production.
Okay.
And there are very different views on how much backup you really need. So some people say you need 100% backup. At the moment, we go along without backups.
Mm-hmm. Now,
but of course, that's interesting. Yes.
I'm surprised that your levelized cost of nuclear is that high, because you already had the nuclear power plants in existence. They were already...
That is for new installations.
But you're not building any new installations.
Right. But if we would decide on new nuclear, this would be the cost. The existing nuclear are among the cheapest.
Mm-hmm.
They're what we know from the producers are they're below 2 cents.
Right.
Officially, they are around 2 and something, but in reality, they're much below 2 cents.
Mm-hmm.
And that is only comparable with lignite, which is among the cheapest from existing power plants. But if you look in the future, because we have to, we have to build up. What you can see at the moment, if you look at the constructions, what we have in Europe, we have one very prominent plant in Finland, which is an interesting example how timing and costs are developing,
mm-hmm.
triples at the moment. And what you also see is in UK, they just ordered two new power stations, nuclear power stations, and the cost for these and the feed-ins are quite remarkable. So they will receive, I think, 35 years feed-in tariff, the new nuclears in the United Kingdom. And I think above double price of the market price around, and they get an inflation compensation as well. So that's quite remarkable.
So if you hadn't decided to close the nuclear power plants and you just extended their lifetime like we're doing in the United States, what kind of costs would you have been looking at?
We would have savings for the first 10 years, and then we would have a negative influence after 10 years. We looked at that because we had different extension times. We calculated different extension times because this was in the discussion in Germany, how much we would extend the lifetimes of nuclear power plants. That was in the discussion in 2009. And we looked from 4 years up to 30 years extension, so that 30 years is around 60 years total. And then, of course, we just came with these new standards from the European Commission for the security. So all these existing power plants would have to be retrofitted. And many of the power plant owners told us that some of them would not bring back that investment anymore. So it was very difficult to calculate at the end. But definitely, just running them longer for the first 10 years, it's savings, definitely.
Do you, in the sort of follow-up question, if the lawsuits that have been filed by the nuclear power plant owners happen to be approved by the courts, who's going to pay that money, and how does that impact your energy costs?
That would be money which has to be paid by the government. It would be public money.
Mm-hmm. So the decision could have been, when you're bringing in all these wonderful new renewable sources, to use that to shut down lignite and hard coal plants instead of shutting down nuclear plants.
Instead of nuclear, you
had to make room in the market for all the renewables. You couldn't just build capacity and have no place for the electricity to go. So.
Well,
shutting down nuclear is making room in the market for
our fleet of power plants is very old, almost comparable to that in the United States. So mm-hmm. over the years, it will melt down. We have to build new coal power plants nowadays in the coming years. Not in this year, but within the next 15 years. Now at the moment, we have overcapacity. The power market is among, I think, the most complicated things on Earth. Well, actually, and then, of course, you couldn't replace lignite and hard coal with nuclear because that's not in the same dimension. I mean, we have 40% or 40 to 50% coal, and we only have 20%. We had 20% nuclear in the electricity market.
So, how much of that coal was imported? Not the lignite, the coal.
The hard coal, nowadays, most of that is imported, and in 2 years, everything will be imported.
So if you would argue from a perspective of energy independence or energy security, it would make more sense to go away from the importing market to having something genuine.
Absolutely.
As a nuclear.
Nuclear is 100% imported.
Well, the fuel is imported, but the fuel is a very small portion.
I mean, the coal plants for coal are also not imported. So.
But the fuel is a very small portion of nuclear, whereas the fuel for hard coal is a very large portion.
I know that the economy ministry, which is my ministry, distribute defines nuclear as a homegrown because you can store the fuel for a few years. But look at the long term effect, you of course have to import everything. And if that source is depleted, it's gone. So it's not an infinite source. First.
Well, you could switch to MOX and thus evade the problem of having to import the fuel.
Of course, you could.
And you also
but you
have
also have your income.
It's a lot of nuclear supporters.
Yeah, of course. Well, first of all, we look at the technology which is at hand and available. And what we observe is that over the last years, solar, and this is even outdated now, that the cost for new solar are below the cost for a new nuclear.
A lot of those new solar, though, is coming from China, no longer from your own domestic production.
Absolutely, like our cameras and a lot of electric. Yeah. And nobody actually belief that we could hold the production within Germany forever.
Yeah.
But that's actually with regard to work power and jobs, that's 1/6 of the solar market. 1/6 is the production of the solar panels, and 5/6 are the rest, you know, installation, maintenance, and everything, and products for that. So this is quite an impressive figure. This is how the cost for a solar installation, so what everybody pays if you put solar on the rooftop. In Germany, that was only a few years ago, it was around 5,000 euro per watt peak, and now it's around 1,700 for kilowatt peak. So, nuclear phase out. Actually, that decision, I talked a little bit about that, was not only taken in 2011 after Fukushima. Actually, it was a long-term development where the question was how long would we make use of nuclear power, and actually in 2010 it was an extension of the of power plant operations, and then that, was taken back in 2011 after Fukushima. So 8 of our 17 nuclear power plants were immediately taken off the grid. They went on offline. One actually was already not producing. And the remaining 9 will be phased out until 22. That is the plan. So,
So that's basically not renewing the extension of the nuclear power plant.
Right.
It's not just the, it's a good power plant, young power plant, and you're shutting it down. It's basically, it has to come to a term for renewal, and you're just not giving a renewal.
Right.
They're already very old, and it's already
they're
shutting them down before the end of the
term.
Right.
Design
yes.
life.
the plans were initially planned for 40 years. That's what engineers mm-hmm. tell us. But of course, you can extend that.
If
you retrofit it, you can extend that to 80 years, maybe, or 60 years from the material. It would be possible. But of course, the question is whether these retrofittings are paid back over the running time. And with growing renewables, even the nuclear power plants, they have to, you know, they have to be more flexible, and that's the problem. So the old power plants are not really flexible. So engineers tell us that they can ramp up and down, maybe down to 70%, sometimes 60%, but they cannot ramp down very fastly, and they don't want to do that very often, down to 20 or 30%, which they would have to do in the years or so. And that is why it's not only a problem of the total running times, also a problem of the flexibility in the German power market with increasing renewables.
When they shut down, what do you do with them?
Well, that is a very good question. So our utilities, they have to build up money reserves,
mm-hmm.
so savings. It's quite good organized. So they are in charge of taking care for the waste and for, you know, building down the power plants and taking care for them.
Mm-hmm.
And the total of their savings is now around something around 30 billion euro. And now the question is that money enough? And some of the utilities, they have problems now. So they have actually, they asked the government whether the government would like to take over responsibility for the waste. The government is seriously thinking about it. Because maybe in 10 years, they don't even get the 30 billion anymore. So they don't have, the 30 billion are now available, more or less, but it's not sure whether they will be available in 20 years, let's say, or in 10 years, when that's interesting. So it's kind of a bargain, and then the utilities told the government, well, we take back our lawsuits against you, and I think it will be very interesting, and nobody knows about the real costs of managing the phased out or the old power plants. You have to take care of them for 1,000 years. Yes.
When you talk about the cost for nuclear, and if I understand correctly, that refers to hypothetical new built nuclear power plants, does that factor in money set aside for the waste issue?
No.
Okay. So it's only construction money, licensing, and stuff.
Yes. Yes. So what you can see that the nowadays cost for running a power plant, if you look at UK, these are around the costs. I mean, this is EDF, who is very exercised in doing that. EDF will build the power plants in UK, and that is the money they need to make their profit. And that is double market price and feed them for 35 years.
Weren't the renewable, like, that tariff feed-in prices in the UK higher than that?
No, they're high. In Germany, they were only
In the UK.
In the UK, that's different. The wind price a little bit more expensive than in Germany, but it's below that. No, the wind price would be in the same order of that nuclear.
Onshore wind. Onshore wind is essentially the same as nuclear, and offshore wind is almost double the
nuclear. But not for 35. But only for 35 years.
Well,
can be assured of that.
But offshore wind assets not going to last for 35 years.
Well, if you look at Germany, we will have a condensed feed-in, what we pay the offshore wind producers. That means they get more in the first 8 years because the first years are very investment intense, and so they get back their money quicker.
That's quite a popular structure. The businesses involved recognize the time value of money better than the government does.
And then after that, they will get up to 18 cents per kilowatt hour, and after that they get 3.9 cents. That is, so in total, it's not that much. In total, it's much, much less than what UK nuclear power plants will get.
Is the North Sea wind farm back online now? I understood it had been shut down last year.
Well, we have, I think, exactly how many we have online. I think we have four parks online and one in the Baltic Sea. And I mean, some of them get on and off because they're still struggling with different situations. And one had to wait until the cable was built, and there was a disaster because
there's some fire.
It started to rust, and then they had to run it with, these are the baby problems which all the technologies have. I mean, that the first windmill, it just collapsed in Germany some 30 years ago, and nobody believed that it ever could, you know, provide for electricity in Germany. And our utilities, they had a huge campaign in 1995 or so, after the first disasters, nuclear disasters, and they had a bad time because society was backing up against nuclear power, and they run a big campaign stating that in Germany it would physically not be possible to have more than 3% physically, from the law of physics, more than 3% renewables. That's what they said, and some people believed it. Now we have 29% because the technology developed.
And because you have a lot of help from your neighbors.
We come to that, help from the neighbors. This is actually the question, because when you have these kind of policies, you get a lot of studies from interested people. So we got each day a new study, particularly telling us, if you shut down these 8 nuclear power plants in Germany, we'll have to import from our neighbors, particularly from France, who's running 75%.
I would say you have to trade with your neighbors.
We trade with our neighbors, in both directions. I will show you the figures in a minute. The second, what we heard is we will have outages. Our grid will not be stable enough anymore if you take down 8 gigawatt of capacity. Then, of course, the question was, would we burn more coal to compensate for nuclear power plants? And then, of course, one study told us for society it will be very expensive because the GDP will decrease due to the increase in wholesale electricity prices and an increase of CO2 prices in Europe. And the question, of course, now we have 3 years of experience, did that really happen? So this is what happened with the imports and exports balance. That is the net, the black line you can see is the net electricity trade. And that is, in the last year, 33 terawatt hours. That is 5.5% of our total electricity production we imported on a net basis, more than ever in Germany. So you could say this is when the shutdown took place, then it went down a little bit, still exporting on a net basis, and then it went up. So we have definitely an overcapacity in Germany, and we are exporting more than ever. Actually, these exports, mostly coal power exports, are explaining why our emissions went up in the last 2 years.
Do you have a graph on Euro flow?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, how many euros are you spending to bring in power, and how many euros are you getting to sell power?
That's a very good question. The average imported kilowatt hour is cheaper than the exported, so we make a business with it. Yeah.
Okay.
There are a few hours where we have to sell with negative prices. You lose a lot of money, but these are a few terawatt hours only. Not terawatt hours, megawatt hours only. The average comes with a profit. So what you read is over here, the media focus on the very negative things. So we have a few hours in the year we have negative prices, and this can be a problem in the future, that is true. So far, it is a very, very rare experience.
Can I ask a question? What are the figures do you need to import nuclear baseload so that you can export renewable electricity?
Import, well, actually we always ex or import a mix, but of course you can say how the different, you can see from the statistics what kind of sources went up and down. But where should we import nuclear power from?
Well, you might import. Nuclear baseload from France and export wind.
I'm just curious. What really happens? I mean, of course, there are situations. France is our biggest trade partner, so Germany is in the middle of 9 other countries. We are trading all the time with all the countries, and even we're using some other countries to transport our electricity. And then, of course, we also use the Polish and the Czech grid to transport from North Germany to South Germany sometimes. They're not very happy about that because the grid is very very weak. And they will stop it, of course, because we will build in some devices for that. Which is not so good for Poland because they are relying on our electricity and other times as well. Same happens to French nuclear power. So in the first winter, when everybody was predicting an outage in Germany, we were exporting to France. It was a very cold winter. And France is heating, like in your country, with electricity. And their nuclear power plants didn't cope with the situation anymore. So Germany had to pump more electricity than ever in that winter. That was very, very interesting because it was predicted. What we also see is that we still have an overcapacity for coal power plants. Why is that so? I mean, they were planned in days where that renewable development was not planned. So there are now in addition to what we need. And what they do is they have a very good situation for their competition situation. They are very competitive in Europe, the German power plants. And the CO2 price is very low, that goes for whole Europe, and the US coal is very cheap. So they are producing more and particularly selling that to the Netherlands. You can see that from the statistics. So most of our surplus energy is coal power energy going steadily to the Netherlands. And they are very unhappy with that because their gas power plants, even the newer ones, are not running anymore. So the whole European power market is actually under stress, not only the German one.
What do you think the impact would be if the energy union concept is successful in better integrating the Iberian Peninsula in with France, in with the French market, and thus as well integrating it with your market?
This is the target of the European Commission to build something like a metal plant, so you can exchange the electricity wherever it is needed. That is the ideal situation. We won't have that in the next 2 decades, probably. But it would, of course, be an improvement, of course. And, of course, there are different studies out.
Be an improvement for Spain? Or be an improvement for the Iberian Peninsula? Or be an improvement for France? Or be an improvement for Germany? Because there's a reason it hasn't happened yet, right?
Yeah,
arguably, that's because France.
That is because the transmission lines are so difficult to plan. And that is why you cannot really predict what's happening with the different sources in Europe. It changes so fast. I mean, Spain just changed their whole renewable policy within the last 5 years. So you couldn't predict that 10 years ago.
After it bankrupted them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, second question. Do we have more outages since we shut down nuclear power? But actually, shutting down nuclear power sounds more dramatic than it is. I mean, it was 8 gigawatt out of 93 gigawatt secure capacity. and out of 180 gigawatt what we have at the moment. So it's not the biggest part of our electricity. And what you can see here is that the supply failures, the average, so Germany ranks among the best still. So we didn't experience any outages. What you often hear is that you have more interventions in the grid. You very often hear that nowadays we need a lot of more interventions. That is absolutely true. And it is like my new telephone. It has, I think, 10 million times more interventions than my telephone 5 years ago, and it works much better. And so does the German grid at the moment. We are quite surprised what happens in the eastern part of Europe, of Germany. There's one of the grid managers. They are coping with 45% renewable share in average over the year. And they have the old grid, which was constructed for nothing like 45% of fluctuating renewables. And they're doing very well. So they're learning a lot about flexibility measures. And that is quite interesting.
Now, you do still have 9 nuclear power plants operating.
We still have 9.
Okay.
Yes.
9 large nuclear power plants.
Yes. So that is the German electricity mix. What you can see is that the whole fossil is more or less the same. So this is gas, which went down in the last years, and there was a little increase in lignite. It's not a coal renaissance. You couldn't call that really a coal renaissance, but this is what happened, a little increase which compensated for the gas decrease, because gas is not competitive in the German power market anymore. That is a real problem, because we have some very nice high-efficiency gas power plants which hardly run.
Is that partially because CO2 emissions credits are so cheap right now?
CO2, the ton is so cheap. I come to that in the next slide. But you also can see, if you look at the rest of the electricity, this is renewable, this is nuclear, you can see that this chunk is the same size, so renewable in terawatt hour compensated for the reduction of nuclear production.
Isn't Vattenfall building some new coal, lignite coal plants in Germany now?
Yes, we had a new one opened last year. It's the most efficient one of lignite coal plants ever. That one is running. The new plants are now on hold, but I think we have something in the order of 6 to 9 projects which are still running, which should be open over the next 10 years. But I think they're going up and down with their plans. We calculated that we would need 13 more gigawatt. That was what we calculated in 2011, and that's not state of the art anymore. So they're going down in their plannings.
Excuse me. On this table, do you have an estimate of what the energy production consumption would have been without efficiency investments?
Well, we didn't really increase our efficiency so much. What you can see here, we didn't. The target is to bring down our electricity consumption by 20%. We are far away from that at the moment. So that's what you're talking about, or the efficiency of the power plants?
Talking about overall economy, if you were to extrapolate what the consumption would have been without investing in overall economics, efficiency in the economy overall.
What you can do is you can compare with other industrial countries with lower efficiency, and then you could,
Sometimes there's sort of a dotted line on this typical chart.
No, I don't have that, but yeah, that would be difference. Because Germany is considered, the industry is considered as rather in the top third of efficiency worldwide.
I'm sorry, one more question to the table you just showed. So going straight forward to the next couple of years, phasing out nuclear, reducing lignite and coal, which energy source is going to provide the baseload power?
I have the
Russian gas.
Let's hope for the worst.
That would be fantastic.
That's a very telling comment. The German representative says it would be fantastic to increase the consumption of Russian gas.
Actually, it takes another 40 years until renewable will achieve 80%. So until then, even then, we have 20%, and that will be mainly one of these two coals, probably lignite, there are different calculations because they are not planned. It's not decided by the government. The market will decide that. One possibility is lignite CCS, but CCS is so improbable to occur in Germany that we don't see it at the moment. But it will be one of two coals, and of course we would love to have gas, but at the moment...
Since he repeated it, it's pretty obvious that the man loves Russian gas.
The market doesn't show that. And of course then until 2050 we will have a CO2 price which will be much higher than today's price. But before gas is competitive against lignite, that would need a CO2 price of 35 euro per ton. Mm.
Would you repeat your figure? It takes another 40 years for renewables to achieve...
80%, yeah, 80. From now on, only another 36 years or 35 years, if they achieve their target.
Can I ask a question about the lignite plants? Like, wouldn't you be better off importing U.S. coal instead of, you know, doesn't that burn a lot more efficiently than, you know, the domestic lignite?
Well, at the moment, the market price for hard coal is much above, even with the imported U.S. coal, it's much above the lignite. So lignite, you know, at the moment, the market decides for lignite.
But I mean, from a emissions, a clean air standpoint.
That would mean we have the same kind of EPA standards what you have in your country, and that is, we are far away from that. We have the CO2 price in Europe. And at the moment, there's no policy in, you know, putting lignite into a disadvantage because there are two very strong federal states on lignite, where lignite is produced. And like in your country, I mean, in Kentucky, you can't be governor, you know.
We don't have nuclear plants in Kentucky.
Well, the market at the moment does not decide against lignite. But of course, for emission-wise, in the future, we will need that. But our long-term studies tell us, well, with 20% remaining electricity, and that part of that will come from lignite, we can achieve our climate targets.
So is the priority on phasing out the imported hard coal as opposed to...
No, there's no
priority.
No.
Okay.
The question is whether we could introduce maybe an emission target or... efficiency target, but that is very difficult at the moment, to be honest.
Do you believe there's some sort of conflict of interest in
yes.
the energy security?
Absolutely, absolutely. There's a conflict of interest between industry and policy at the moment. So because the environment ministry, they are in favor of introducing something to phase out another dozen of coal power plants, and the economy ministry says, no way.
Although the market may have decided, if the market was allowed to choose, they may have decided to keep the nuclear plants.
At the moment, there's an act on that. So this is not a decision of the market. There's an on phasing out nuclear. But this last interesting thing I think I wanted to show you is, did the wholesale price increase or the CO2 price increase, what all the studies told us in 2011. And this is a very good example, what you hear and what you get. So we heard from industry, this is what happened to the GDP and the prices, and this is what happened. So the prices for wholesale went down by over 30% since 2011 for different reasons. One reason I showed you that renewables are lowering this wholesale price, and then the CO2 price collapsed. And that is not related to the energy transition policy in Germany. That simply and reflects on the over allocation of allowances in the European market and the European crisis. But nothing happened like it was predicted, and that is why you should be very careful if you read these studies, what will happen if you introduce a new policy.
Sir, I have to ask you a question. The wholesale price went down, but you said over the past decade, electricity prices have almost doubled since 2001.
Right, bring that together. So the one is the wholesale price is what the stock market decides, or the market.
Spot market.
The other thing is what utilities take from the consumers.
Right.
That went up. In the same time, stock market price went down.
So I don't think it's fair for a study to talk about the decrease in wholesale price on the impact on GDP is what the consumer pays.
Well, the studies which I was reacting on are the industry association studies, and they said for industry it will be a burden, but industry benefits from lower wholesale prices.
If that happened in the United States and electricity prices doubled, there'd be
riots
in the streets, and and policy would change.
Well, particularly if the consumers found out that the industry wasn't paying those
exactly.
higher prices.
Well, you know.
So, do you think the consumer in Germany is willing to experience another increase in price in the next coming decade?
I don't think so. But the interesting question is, what are the reasons why the price doubled? And from the picture I showed you, you could see it is not renewable surcharge. Renewable surcharge made up for a little chunk of that,
mm-hmm.
but not the whole. You know. And now the question is, why did the price go up?
So in your view, why did the price go up?
Pardon?
What is your view why the prices went up if it wasn't
the renewable surcharge? You can see it from the different
surcharge.
Elements. You can see it definitely. So the production price went up, although the wholesale price went down, so it was more profit for utilities.
No. The cost of generating electricity, the production cost, actually increased as the wholesale price, the market price, dropped.
Yes.
Because it costs more money to vary your power plants to respond to the varying loads. You can do it, as you said, it is possible, but it costs more money. And it costs more effort to vary your power plants up and down. It
depends very much on your power mix. So we have 4 big utilities in Germany, and they have very different performances.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole, they are all suffering from the last years. But they had, for instance, 2 of them, they had record profits in the year 2012 after the decision of the energy transition. So they had record benefits and profits. Because sometimes it's related to their international business, so particularly E.ON, they suffered for their international business, where they had, you know, they just had wrong investments, you could say, and in other countries. But that is very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's important to differ between impacts on the price and not impact on the price. And what we heard is that the energy transition was blamed to increase the prices. And they are only responsible for a small price of the private consumer,
mm-hmm.
electricity price, and not responsible for an increase in industry electricity prices. These prices went down. And you don't hear that from industry associations most of the time.
Joe, can I ask, at the time when the costs were being calculated and when the policy was being designed, was there ever consideration of putting those costs into the as a tax burden instead of an electricity surcharge?
Well, that would have changed at those days the most powerful and successful instrument, and that was not really discussed. The question was, after the surcharge went further up and up, the question was whether that above a certain cap would be covered by government money. That was one discussion, but it wasn't decided on that. Because the chancellor actually promised the surcharge will never increase above 3 cents per kilowatt hour, and now it's 6 cents. So you could argue, well, policy could have done something at that days.
Which chancellor was that?
Merkel. Merkel, the present chancellor.
Okay.
That is only 3 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the industrial price that you talked about, like what percent of the total German electric load is that?
That is quite interesting, because the official average industry price is around 10 cents per kilowatt hour, but studies show that If you are a big consumer, then your individual price will be around 4 cents. We have a study on that, and you don't get the figures if you ask companies, of course. So we want to know, of course, what are the real price differences between a company in Germany and the United States, and what is related to our policy and what is not related to our policy. And a lot of things are not related to our policy. For instance, the gas price, we have no influence on that. So if a German company is a high electricity consumer, he does not pay any surcharge, in Germany. He does not pay a surcharge on renewables, on the grid, on heat and power combination. He doesn't do that. So he is in the same order of price magnitude like a new comparable U.S. industry. So it's around between 3 and 5 cents per kilowatt hour.
I want to emphasize that point. Industrial prices for electricity in Germany are 3 to 5 cents per kilowatt hour. The consumer pays 33.5 cents per kilowatt hour.
But if you look at overall German electricity production in a year, what percent
The share that the share of energy costs. So
right.
The interesting thing is that 90% of German industry has energy costs below 2% of their total investment. Of course, the energy intensive sectors, they go up to 8% and more, and some single industries even much more. For them, it's really interesting how the energy costs are. And then, of course, there's a difference between energy and electricity. People always mix that up, but that's the way it is. Electricity is usually a very small share. But of course, some are the losers in Germany. Like, for instance, the bakers. They are not exempted from the recharge, and electricity is a huge share of their marginal cost, like 30% sometimes. So they are paying more. And of course, they are not in international competition, so you could say, well, then just the bagels are getting more expensive. that's what happens. Well, because we try to figure out who's really, who's endangered, who's threatened by the policy, and who's not. And we figured out the industry is, in large parts, not at all.
The export industry. The only industry that's exempted from those charges is the people that are competing in the international markets.
No, you can be energy intensive and you are exempted.
Except unless you're a baker.
Yeah, from a certain threshold on.
Yeah, unless you're somebody making bread for those poor people.
Then you don't use enough energy.
So in other words, those indirect cost increases for consumers, as you said, the bagel gets more expensive. They are not factored when it comes to how much do consumers pay more as a result of the change of policy.
No.
Okay. So they are hidden costs.
These are hidden costs, but the biggest hidden costs are also not in the calculation. These are the external costs.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the external costs, serious scientists calculate something like 70 euro per ton. CO2. If you calculate that in,
mm-hmm.
everything is twice and triple as expensive as renewables.
It's kind of like comparing apples and pears.
Well, for some people, for some people, it's very important to include that.
Mm-hmm.
For other people, it's a no-go.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we just observe that. And of course, there's a growing, growing community who's taking that into consideration,
mm-hmm.
because carbon costs are somewhere experience, so that they are there. The question is how much that is. The question is, could you really distribute, 70 or something like per kilowatt hour or per ton of your business? That is very, very difficult. I think they just did that in Minnesota. I think they calculated that electricity carbon what's called index or so. Have you heard of that? So that should include an external cost aspect as well to each kilowatt hour. And that depends, of course, how much different sources you are using for your electricity and so on.
One of the things that most people agree that as we move forward with more renewables, we'll need to be able to store more electricity for higher demand periods.
Absolutely.
What effect has the transition had so far on the storage that already exists? I know that Germany has a fair number of pumped storage locations that were built, and they were economical when they could sell their electricity at the peak loads and, store cheap, sell high.
Absolutely.
But a lot of times those peaks are being shaved off, right?
Right.
Being shaved off when the wholesale prices are very low.
Right. So particularly the noon solar peak, they shaved off a lot of businesses. particularly the gas very power plants.
Well, and for the stored hydro was...
Exactly. So the question was whether we would include storage into the feed-in system, mm-hmm. and that was not decided. I think it's half decided only. And the question now is when will we need a big amount of storage? Surprisingly, we don't need that today. But in the near future, like with 50 and more percentage of renewables in the power market, that definitely would be a time when we need more storage. And there are four ways the government looks at that. Mm-hmm. And one way is trying to use the capacities of Scandinavia. One is to build cheaper storages at home as soon as we have them. At the moment, we are using already batteries for grid reliability devices, which are getting cheaper and cheaper. Actually, the grid reliability got cheaper over the last 3 years, which I have found surprising because you have to do more nowadays, but the devices are getting cheaper mm-hmm. and the experience is increasing. So that was not a cost factor. We thought that would be a cost factor.
Since these pump storage facilities have been built and exist and are not economical right now, can they be put on like cold standby until they are needed again? Or
we need a better tariff system for them, okay. so that they get competitive. And of course, in the near future, we will need some. I think in 10 years or so. At the moment, we have a very small amount of storages only. I think it's below a giga or so, or around a giga. I think. It's not much.
Okay. I thought there was more than that.
But this is just a few things we are doing with a feed-in tariff. So you can see here, just to give you an impression, this was a feed-in tariff some 8 years ago, and now we are here, more or less one quarter. So if you take all the new capacities which are built, because now the government decided on corridors, so we don't allow any amount of new capacities anymore, but there will be corridors. So we want to have to balance that new capacities, because we had these very expensive and very high new capacities between 2010 and 2012. It was 7,000 megawatt new photovoltaic each year. That is, in those days, was more than the U.S. had in total. Now we have more each year, and for a very high price, so around 40 cents per kilowatt hour. Now that problem is solved. New capacities is not the cost problem anymore. All the new capacities being built are not adding a big chunk to the feed-in tariff anymore. It is the old capacities which will be carried for 20 years. And there's a backpack we will carry for another 15 years of the very expensive photovoltaic we those days built up.
Now that change was just August of 2014?
Yes.
So don't know yet what the effect of that lowered feed-in tariff is going to be on new construction.
We can see that it is going on. I mean, these feed-in tariffs were not changed. These are valid since 1st January 14, and we are building up within the corridor. Now, this one wasn't lowered in August. August 14 only decided on these elements. So we will have more market integration. We will have some projects looking at the market integration of different sources, and then we decided on the binding development corridor and so forth. The idea is to bring the renewables into the market and to get rid of the support system within the 1 or 2 decades. So these are just a few observations, how the prices went down. This is a tendering scheme which will be tested next year. And what you can see here, exemptions will be continuing, exempts for energy-intensive industries. So you can see who's paying actually for the feed-in surcharge. It's less and less terawatt hours are paying for that. That is something which is discussed in the public in Germany, whether everybody should pay the same amount or whether everybody should be exempted if it's an intensive industry or and so forth. That is the situation at the moment. So in summary, it is something which is happening. It's not just a program. It is already happening. We are in the middle of it, but it will take a few more generations. It will be mostly renewables, will be mostly driven by wind and solar. Grid expansion is very important. Efficiency is maybe the most important thing in the whole policy. And it's the biggest challenge, I would say. But what we already see, we have a lot of economic opportunities for new and for existing industry. I give you an example. So the steel industry at the moment sells more steel to the windmill makers than to the shipping industry. And not only because the shipping industry is lying on the ground, they're doing quite well because shipping is expanding as well. So it is for existing industry, also for the chemical industry in Germany, it's a very good economic opportunity, and for concrete, cement, everything is involved from the big industries. Well, then of course, transportation sector, we don't have solutions so far. We only have a few little solutions, like biofuels, which are very limited in Germany. So sustainable biofuel, we don't have that amount of plants for biofuel. We have, of course, electric vehicles. The plan is to have 1 million on the roads in 2020 and 6 million in 2030. Let's see what happens. And what is very important for that policy, we have monitoring. So one of the reports is this one. The second monitoring report tells you very briefly what is our target and where are we, and what works, what does not work.
How electrified are your rails? I know you have a pretty good train system. How much is it of that is electrified?
Well, that is almost everything is electrified.
Okay.
They even have an own grid.
Okay.
Transportation system, yeah. And this is one map I love. I mean, that reflects this what the people say here. In Germany, you have not the best solar radiation conditions. You know, like almost comparable to Alaska and the United States. Yeah, fantastic. At least twice the radiation.
There's not very many roofs there, though.
What?
There's not very many roofs there.
Not so many roofs over here compared to this part of Germany, particularly. Here's every southern facing roof more or less has a photovoltaic system on it. It's coming over here.
We don't have the grid to get electricity from those states to the population centers. So my question actually for you is, who pays for the upgrades to the German grid? Is that tax dollars?
No, that is system money. Like every consumer pays system money. It's not that much. We calculate about 25 billion what we need for the whole grid upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
25 billion in the next 20 years. So if the oil price increases in Germany or on the world market for 15 euro the barrel, that costs 25 billion for the German society, and that goes 100% to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, but so to upgrade the grid, it's on the utility customers, but if the person is getting their own solar energy, they're not paying for the grid?
That is introduced now. They have to pay now for their own produced money, they have to pay the feed-in, and they have to pay the other surcharges.
Okay.
So they will join that. But of course, there are a lot of countries with a bad grid which can benefit from solar, and then they don't need to build that amount of new grids. So for a lot of countries, particularly in Africa, where they're not going for 100% reliability in the first years, solar is a wonderful solution to cover the needs.
What is it that prevents you from having a sophisticated plan like you have for electricity for transportation?
Well, we don't have in the same way the solutions in place for transport, because we cannot rely on renewables in the transport sector. Or we think something around 10% of our fuels could be made biofuels. Mm-hmm. From biofuels, but not more. That is the sustainability maximum mm-hmm. from today's technology. If we have second generation biofuels, it might change. But we don't have that big scale available. I thought United States would have that. 3 years ago, but then I figured out, no, they're still working on it. So EPA just took back the targets.
Now, one of the other assumptions that you had in your plan that doesn't apply to the United States is your country is shrinking in population. It assumed a 10% reduction in population
exactly.
by 2040 or whatever it was. We are not even close to shrinking. We're still growing in population.
You're growing. But you have, I mean, there are studies showing that U.S., because you have double the potential at least per square meter, and you only have the population densities, which is much lower than Germany. So this is not an explanation at all. Actually, you have much, much better conditions in Germany. It's much easier for the United States to do that.
Well, the denser population makes it easier for solar photovoltaic, for example, because, like I said, you had roofs. We have a lot of sunshine in places where there's no roofs and not much sunshine in places where there are roofs.
Well, we have better sunshine most of the places. Than
the and we have a lot of government land to access.
Going back to your assumptions that not only is it a 10% decrease in population, you also said there's going to be a 40% increase in GDP.
Yeah.
How does that...
And a 50% total reduction in energy.
I would not rely on future studies 40 years ahead on the GDP. But of course, you have to put it into the calculator. The whole system doesn't run. These are the most, I would say, the most difficult variables, which you really cannot predict.
And you're also still assuming a 50% reduction in total energy use.
That is one
which
precondition.
You're not on the path to get there.
Absolutely. That is one precondition in order to get these amounts of renewables, let's say, for a good price. Otherwise, we would have to produce double.
Yeah, you have to have more and more overcapacity.
But even the studies from 2011 are now so outdated in terms of prices. Because what I showed you, we expected, I think, a decrease of something, a learning curve, which was much, much slower than what we really experienced. So nowadays, it only costs half of it.
Well, what you really experienced, at least in the solar market, was a market collapse when Spain changed their rules considerably, and there was more supply than demand.
I think
I don't think that's going to continue at that rate.
No, not at that rate. What really had a big influence was that China stepped on the market, and they produced, I would say, under production costs for the first years, and they drove out the German producers out of the market. But nowadays, I mean, what you always have, you have a so-called self-reparation system of the market, and now the companies are surviving. And under the first top 10, there are United States companies and Chinese, no German. Mm-hmm.
What assumptions do you make about transport electrification? In other words, is what would be a big surprise to the downside, or what would be a big surprise to the upside?
At the moment, we are not on track. So the only target is 1 million electric vehicles. That includes light trucks and vehicles. And we're not on track. And 6 million in 2030. But of course, if the industry, if the car makers decide to do that, and if some very important cost elements get down, if they can bring them down, I would say it's possible, but I can't tell you what.
But you would need more electric capacity to charge those cars.
Right. That's what I was trying to get, just trying to understand what role that plays in your expected...
Oh, you mean in the flexibility of the
Yeah, how much additional electricity consumption in 2030 assume that goes into the transport sector as opposed to other sectors?
Of course, there's an increase, so you have to overcompensate the increase in
Okay.
We have to do that. We have it in our calculations, of course.
Okay.
Do you give subsidies to people for making their homes more energy efficient? Because you said the biggest potential is in the residential sector, and that to me means
Yes, there are
lots of home
rather
costs.
Small grants, and there's an obligation for new buildings to use one of three different measures, either efficiency or renewables, or a mix of very efficient heat and power.
Mm-hmm.
You have to use either one of those three solutions, and then you can get a little grant if you're more efficient, like say you install a heat pump, if that's higher efficiency than I forgot the number, but something like 3, I think. Then you get an extra grant for that. But it's not that much. And of course, we try to put in money to set an incentment for, let's say, particularly for the buildings. So people get cheap grants or cheap loans if they are retrofitting electrically or energetically retrofitting their buildings. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult because that pays back after, let's say, sometimes after 15 years, sometimes after 20 years, only depends how clever you are in your measures, and people don't like it too much.
Plus, Germany's already more energy efficient than we are.
Not in the buildings. I mean, of course, maybe more than here. But
most
of
the power goes to pumping water, and your pumps are like the best pumps in the world.
Not yet. It's so amazing what you see, what can be done without extra costs. So each year, you get these very interesting cost curves for measures, and most of the measures are zero cost or below, and they're not done. So, of course, the question is why people don't do that. And most of the answers are because the payoff times are longer than 2 years, and industry very, very seldom introduces new, not known technology with a long payoff time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the big hurdles for us. And the private sector, I think it's better, the condition is better than the United States because people own their houses longer. So for a lot of people, it makes sense to do a retrofitting which pays off after 20 years. Over here, it's almost a no-go. So you have to intensify maybe that.
But fewer people own their homes. It's only
in Germany,
41%.
Yeah. And then you have the owner and rental problem. Right.
Are there tax incentives, tax breaks for landlords to do that to apartments that they rent out?
No, but there are indirect things like if you achieve a certain energy efficiency, that increases the value of your house and that increases the quality, and then you can take more rent, so indirectly you get your money back.
Dr. Mao, will this be available for distribution?
Of course, yeah.
Okay.
If you can distribute
sure,
it. Somebody
sure.
wants an, as a PDF, maybe.
Okay. I mean, if anyone would like a copy, we can certainly email it, but I think we're slightly above beyond time, but I mean, I guess it depends on...
Yeah.
This is an interesting discussion, so if anyone is willing to stick around and if you have time, then of course please feel free to answer any questions they might have.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's pretty acceptable, though, in Europe, right? I mean, there aren't many that are in Denmark.
So I hope you enjoyed that. Hope you also recognize that I try to make the best of the opportunities to engage in discussions like this, again, with the help of people who give generous contributions to the Atomic Show and Atomic Insights. It really helps alleviate some of the expenses of traveling and provides the opportunity to bring you more and more information from a wider variety of sources, and also to represent your interests in discussions where there might be others listening, people who are politically engaged and are interested in trying to provide a better energy policy for the United States and the world. We do have the opportunity to have low-cost, emission-free, abundant, reliable energy. We know how to do it. The problem that we have is that many people simply don't believe or don't respect our technology. I may be idealistic, but I think that's a curable condition with effort. Take care. Bye.
There's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way. Ooh, there's a way, such a better way. Today. Today, now raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way.